Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the show that covers the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, or we try to cut through all of the propaganda. And there's some heavy propaganda to be cutting through today as we look at what's going on in Ukraine, because if you picked up the New York Times, oh boy, Putin is about to launch a massive cyber attack against Ukraine and a massive offensive. So we're going to cut through what the New York Times has to say and their sourcing on that story.
Plus, we are going to continue to cover the bank collapse. We have a guest today because that continues to reverberate around the world. It's a story that just will not quit.
And we're also going to look at Operation Mockingbird, you know, where the CIA, the intelligence community, took over newsrooms, basically infiltrated newsrooms across the country, did it clandestinely. Well, now, as Dan Cohen reports, we'll have him on the show. We're going to look at how Operation Mockingbird is alive and well, but now it's just out in the open. And now we're openly commiserating with the intelligence state in our newsrooms. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Happy Thursday to you. It's almost, is it, when the hell is the St. Patrick's Day? When
tomorrow.
Is
that?
Tomorrow is St. Patrick's
Just
Day.
Just ahead okay. of the spring equinox.
That's right.
Which is next week.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I got my lucky undies wet ready. So.
Okay.
I thought you said wet. I got my lucky undies wet.
No.
I was like.
No. Ready.
Ready.
Ready. So top of the evening to you. Welcome to Redacted. Hope everyone's doing well.
There are two holidays that I hate on the internet is April Fool's Day and St. Patrick's Day, because there's so much posturing about like, I'm so cool. Let me show you what I'm going to do something jokey, you know.
Well, I hate it. Yeah. April Fool's Day is the worst, right? It's like, you might as well call it Jackass of the Day. I mean, it's fun with the kids doing, but it, you know, as like an adult or like when Google fake does its fake yeah. thing and you're like, is this a real story? You know, it's like, all right, well, news organizations probably frankly already doing that with their propaganda.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's a Gen X thing to do. Don't do it. It ages you.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that's tomorrow. But anyway, hey, we have a big, busy show for you on this Thursday. And thank you to everyone who subscribes to the show and also smashes that like button. That's something we don't talk about enough, but when you do actually hit that like button, it's not for any other reason other than it pushes our show further out into the YouTube and Rumble algorithms so that other people can actually see the show. So please just press that button if you're watching us on an Apple TV or a Roku. I think, David, what, you can like swipe up with your controller and there's a little menu there where you can actually hit the thumbs up, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just being clear. All right.
And also, I've had several people ask about watching on PlayStations and Xboxes. You can do that as well. You just have to go through the browser. You just go through the browser, go to rumble.com. You can sign in and all that stuff and watch it right there. And if you don't have like Roku or anything like that, most smart TVs have browsers too. So that's one way you can watch it. And that works on both YouTube and Rumble, but Rumble specifically is what people are asking for.
Yeah, I know. Cool. Samsung televisions, they still don't have a Rumble app. And so they're working on it. So hopefully Samsung TVs will get that. But hey, we have a daily newsletter we should tell you about before we get into the news today. All you need to do is go to redacted.inc. You put in your email address and you'll receive our newsletter first thing in the morning over your cup of coffee. You can read the newsletter, enjoy your day. Again, you just have to verify your email. And then it's like five or six different stories that we cover in there. We try to make you smile a little bit. You can read it in about 5 minutes, but you have to verify your email. And the website is redacted.inc. It's not .com. It's redacted.inc. All right, let's get to your top story, which is what Vladimir Putin is going to be doing here in the spring. I'll ask you this question. Is Putin and the Russian army about to launch a massive offensive? Perhaps that's coming. Perhaps is Putin about to launch a massive cyber warfare campaign against Ukraine? Well, the New York Times would have you believe that that's the case. So is this deep state propaganda at work once again by the U.S. intelligence community? Let's dig into this story a little bit. So we've already established how the New York Times is the go-to newspaper for the U.S. intelligence community, right? We've talked about that here on the show. According to John D'Souza, who is a 25-year veteran of the FBI, D'Souza told me directly on this show that if the deep state wants a story out there, if they want to get a story out there, they first go to the New York Times to disseminate that story. He said that's well known in the intelligence community. Also on that list, you have the Associated Press, you have the Washington Post, etc.
Reuters.
Reuters, exactly, exactly. And then, of course, in the UK, you've got the BBC. So we already know that's the case. The New York Times is the tool, is a tool of the U.S. government. So if you picked up the paper this morning, you might have seen this headline. Russia's spring offensive in Ukraine could include cyber attacks, Microsoft says. Microsoft says. That's interesting. Does Microsoft stand to gain anything by pushing this propaganda? Well, it turns out you might even ask the question about Bill Gates. Bill Gates, does Bill Gates stand to profit at all from this propaganda? Gates still holds $19 billion in Microsoft stock. So the answer is yes. Well, it turns out that Microsoft is a military contractor for Ukraine. Don't believe me?
I believe you.
Just read it right on Microsoft's own website. Here's Microsoft's website, blog.microsoft.com. Extending our vital technology support for Ukraine. Now, and you'll see in that picture, look at that picture. That was taken at Web Summit, which was here in Lisbon, Portugal. And I remember at the time hearing about this panel. We covered Web Summit here on the show. And Microsoft there wearing a flag pin, one of the executive from Microsoft wearing a flag pin, sitting next to other Ukrainian t-shirt wearing guys. So what does Microsoft say about the Ukrainian infrastructure, infrastructure? Here's what Microsoft reports on their own website. By dispersing digital infrastructure into the public cloud, Microsoft and others have supported critical Ukrainian services through data centers across Europe, as underscored in Microsoft's report in June. This has played a critical role in protecting the resilience and security of Ukraine's data and digital services, even in the face of Russian cruise missile and other kinetic attacks on Ukraine's government data center and other physical assets. So Microsoft is not just the company that gave us Windows and Clippy. It also is a defense contractor, just like Lockheed Martin and Raytheon. But it goes deeper than that, because according to Fortune magazine, Microsoft tops the list of donors to Ukraine. Here's Fortune. Microsoft tops the list of largest private donors to Ukraine. $430 million. So on the surface, you might say to yourself, hey, that sounds great, very kind of Microsoft to donate that kind of money. But if you dive deeper into what they're doing, it's not altruistic at all. In fact, it seems like it's fully a profit-making center for Microsoft. According to Fortune, Microsoft, $430 million donation in cash and services. When Russia invaded, Microsoft helped the Ukrainian government move its computing from servers located in the country to the cloud.
Well, in fact, that is how the CIA employs most of their contractors. That's why you heard when Edward Snowden was announced that he was just a Dell employee. And he explains this quite eloquently in his book that most people who work for the CIA don't work on a government salary because they just don't make enough, but they can make a lot more by becoming a contractor. So that's why he was an employee of Dell, having never worked in a Dell building before. And he says it's the best known secret in all of Washington is that this is the way that the government transfers money to the private sector is through these contracting gigs.
Makes sense. Yeah, because he says go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, and also think about the digital ID and stuff that we've been talking about. That has to have an operating system. There's technologies inside that for tracking and all kinds of stuff. And I'm sure that I'd have to think Microsoft is involved somehow.
Oh, I would think. You mean the Ukraine digital transformation tracking ID system? Yeah, I would think. Because if according to Microsoft, put this back up if you wouldn't mind, Philip, Microsoft's $430 million donation in cash. So they say it moved its it helped the Ukrainian government move its computing from servers located in the country to the cloud. It moved the entire Ukrainian government onto Microsoft servers. That's in addition to cybersecurity defense and threat detection services that the company is donating to the government. Oh, how altruistic of you. And through some private sector actors. The company matched 10 million in employees donations and donated additional cash and services to humanitarian organizations. Oh, so Microsoft was kind enough to take the entire Ukrainian government and put it on Microsoft's servers. That's altruism.
But you know what? Through propaganda such as this, well, reporting such as this, we'll call it.
Reporting such as this.
They also will be able to sell you plenty of security programs and anti-malware software and things like that, because you're going to get scared with this kind of thing, as if a Russian hacker can't get through something like that.
Right. But something else needs our attention. Oh, go ahead.
Well, as you can say, and as a government, why would you put yourself in a position? Because then if there's ever U.S. sanctions, Microsoft can no longer hold your data.
That's a good point. You have to have a lot of confidence, right, to do something like that.
But there's always carve out and loopholes, right? We've seen all sorts of loopholes and carve outs for what the government wants in these Russian sanctions, right? We've certainly seen that in certain mineral Ukraine no power.
Which, you know, by many arguments, they had very little to begin with.
Right.
But what if they did have this attack of conscience and say, we can't align ourselves with the West anymore. Too many people are dying. We're going to actually go to peace talks with Vladimir Putin, agree to these new borders because the people themselves have voted, and we're going to stop this war. They would be the recipient of sanctions and not be able to access that data. That's a good point that David just made.
So the whole government of Ukraine is on Microsoft servers. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. But something else needs our attention in this New York Times piece of propaganda. Reading now from the New York Times. This is the New York Times. The report also said that Russia appears to be stepping up influence operations outside Ukraine in a push to weaken European and American support for continuing military aid, intelligence sharing, and other assistance to the Ukrainian government. The effort would come as a faction in the Republican Party and some in the Democratic Party argues that supporting Ukraine is not a core interest for the United States. For now, Russia's main influence campaign is concentrated in Europe, but it will shift to the United States as the year gets closer to a presidential election, and that debate is going into the fall, said Clint Watts, the head of Microsoft's Digital Threat Analysis Center. I'm going to say that again. Clint Watts, the head of Microsoft Digital Threat Analysis Center.
Oh, I see what you're planting here.
Clint Watts.
Election, you say.
Clint Watts. That's interesting. Head of Microsoft's Digital Threat Analysis Center. So who the hell is Clint Watts? And why is he the only source for this New York Times article? Oh, here's Clint Watts. Thanks to PBS. Here's a little bio of Clint Watts. PBS, an arm of the federal government. As Moon of Alabama reports, Clint Watts, you'll remember, was front and center of the now debunked Russiagate story. Thanks to Elon Musk and the Twitter files, we now know Clint Watts' name. We covered this on the show before. We've mentioned Clint Watts repeatedly here on Redacted. So when I saw his name pop up in this article, it set off alarm bells. I'm like, where do I know this guy from? Like, where do I know Clint Watts? Where do I know this name from? Well, he was the one and only person that the Democrats and MSNBC basically sourced in order to push their Russiagate story. The one person. Can you imagine? As Fox News reports, latest Twitter files show media Dems relied on a single source alleging Russian bot activity. It was a scam. So as journalist Matt Taibbi reported in January, Democrats like California Democratic Congressman Representative Adam Schiff, Dianne Feinstein, as well as Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, kept pushing all these fake claims about Russia, that they were interfering in the elections, and that Hillary Clinton lost thanks to Russia. Twitter executives, of course, as we reported here on the show, were basically yelling at Congress, saying, this is not true. We don't see any evidence of that. Even Joel Roth was telling them in emails, like, we just got to call BS on this. We got to just tell them this is BS.
Yes, that's what he said internally. But to their faces, he was more like, okay, we'll keep looking, but we don't see it.
You guys want to push this fake Russia story. Okay, I guess we'll go with that. So here is Matt Taibbi on these fake stories that were being created. Watch.
Matt, before you go, real quick, what happened when Twitter said, oh, well, we can't identify Russian bots. We can't identify that this was actually Russian disinformation. That's not what we're finding. Then what did they do to pressure Twitter?
Well, the usual means is they would go to their friends in the corporate press, and Twitter would be hammered by, you know, mainstream press organizations who would say, basically, Twitter is not doing enough to combat foreign interference. As you know, because you were reporting on it at the time, Congressman Devin Nunes got an extraordinary amount of abuse because it was claimed that the hashtag release the memo was boosted by Russian bots. But we now know, based on stuff that we've seen internally in these emails, that there were no Russian bots, that Twitter was actually telling senators like Richard Blumenthal, don't do it, you're going to look foolish. And they did it anyway.
And when they didn't get what they wanted, they went to CNN, The New York Times, Washington Post, and they got stories manufactured against Twitter.
Yeah, that's how it works. So when you read this New York Times piece, you pick that up, think about that for a second. So Taibbi then did a deep dive report on the source for this fake news that Democrats were using. They were using something called Hamilton 68, as we've covered on the show. It's a so-called dashboard that was supposed to be monitoring Russian bot activity. That's the whole purpose of Hamilton 68, right? Taibbi wrote that Hamilton 68 was, quote, the source of hundreds, if not thousands, of mainstream print and TV news stories in the Trump years. One source. And we know that Hamilton 68 was, in fact, led by none other than former FBI special agent and now MSNBC contributor and also now head of Microsoft's Agency for Cyber Threats, which is Clint Watts, who now works at Microsoft.
That's all just too crazy.
Isn't it crazy how it all freaking comes together? But they think you're stupid. So you pick up the New York Times and you see this story, right? I mean, he's a known propagandist, this guy, Clint
Watts.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's done with Russiagate. He did what he was supposed to do, you know, for that purpose. But this is like Russiagate 2.0.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So here you go. But now it
looks. New project.
If you see this.
Same blueprint.
And if you see this New York Times piece, you're like, oh, it's legitimate, right? Because Microsoft says it is, right?
Sure.
That's the headline. Russia's spring offensive in Ukraine could include cyber attacks, Microsoft says.
And unfortunately, a lot of these stories are coming up and it's just, you know, one source is saying one thing, but the Ukrainian army just this week did say that they want to mobilize a cyber army. They literally released a statement about that. And so a lot of times it's just literally the opposite right of what we're seeing. We reported that in the newsletter this morning, the actual statement from the Ukrainian army. And the source was, I'm going to find it.
Clint Watts?
No, her name was Natalia Tkachuk. Chachuk. And she said to Newsweek that Ukraine is regulating the creation and functioning of cyber forces.
Well, they are.
They literally are doing that. And so at the same time that they admit this to Newsweek, the New York Times just flips it on its head and says, no, Russia's doing it. And unfortunately, that's just what we see time and time again from the story we covered about the forces in Tigray. Like they just
in
make
Ethiopia.
It up
yeah.
in Ethiopia, the bombings of one place when we know it's a different party that did it. And it's just they're choosing their side and reporting it based on sources.
Well,
it's easy to do.
Yeah. Go ahead. David.
It's easy to do when they're silencing other places like Al Jazeera or RT or any other media organization that's covering the other side of the story. They shut that off. They can say whatever they want and nobody can counter, you know, do any research against it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, of course Ukraine has a cyber threat security division. It's run by Microsoft.
Well, but what they're asking for, though, this was the chilling part that scared me, is that they're looking for engaging cyber volunteers internationally.
Okay,
so
international hackers.
Not just Ukrainian hackers. They want all of them, anyone who is ideologically aligned, which scares me for many reasons. One, because, yes, of course, you could pull in more talent, although, you know, if you read, you know, many reports that some of the Russian hackers are the best in the world. So do you really want to go up against them? And then also how this can bring the war into different borders, because will Russia then, you know, decide that the United States is a part of it because so many hackers are, you know, fighting on behalf of Ukraine? Will they decide that maybe Argentina, which has its own great army of hackers, you know, how far, where do the borders lie then?
Right. It is borderless at that point, right? Yeah. And you know, so yeah, that's the cyber side of this discussion. And as we wrap this story up, there is the physical side of this, the actual military spring offensive, which by all accounts is coming. In what capacity, we don't know. And if you claim to know, you're wrong.
I just feel like the media is using every season change to get us ready for a new round of war. It's like, it's going to be summer, you know. Like,
it's the spring offensive.
It is just as predictable as Macy's ads.
I mean, they are literally saying May, this is going to happen. And to those people who are fighting day in and day out, I don't think that they really give a rat's ass about a season change. Oh, you mean the Japanese maples are in bloom in Washington, D.C.? It's time to roll our tanks into Kiev. You know, that's what we're going to do.
Oh, it's so, Labor Day sale? Okay.
Yeah, it's the mattress sale for whatever. It's time to mobilize our tanks. They don't care. And what's happening right now in Bakhmut is the collapse. And we at least are getting reports on the Ukrainian side that Ukrainian soldiers are very worried that this is about to be done. That as Ukrainian soldiers being interviewed from the Kiev Independent, basically saying they believe that Russia is about to taste victory there, and that this is a brutal battle that is collapsing all around them. According to the Kiev Independent, I'll just kind of go into the article just a little bit here. Just days, this one reporter writing for, I'm not sure who the byline is, Asimi Terajima from the Kiev Independent, writing, Donetsk Oblast in Donetsk, just days before heading back to fight in the Battle of Bakhmut, a Ukrainian soldier, Vladimir, who's 54, right? So we have a lot of like older soldiers fighting because the rest of the army has been destroyed. Said he felt ill-prepared, this Ukrainian 54-year-old says. When they drive us to Bakhmut, he says, I already know I'm being sent to death, Vladimir told the Kiev Independent during his brief stay in Kratomorsk in Donetsk, 25 kilometers west of the front line. Vladimir, an infantryman from the 93rd Mechanized Brigade, said he struggled to eat after fighting in Bakhmut for months. He looked shaken as he talked. For 2 months, Vladimir's unit was tasked with guarding Bakhmut against small Russian assault groups creeping into the city. Small Russian assault groups. Nothing like the onslaught we're perhaps about to see. The brigade was constantly under mortar fire as soldiers were outdoors, where shrapnels could wound or kill them at any moment. He says, the Russians keep firing at us, but we don't have artillery, so we have nothing to attack them with. I don't know if I will return or not. We are just getting killed. And that is the story over and over again. The destruction in Bakhmut and what's about to happen there. So spring offensive? Yeah, probably likely. Massive cyber war that Microsoft will profit from? Perhaps not. But, well, you know, pick your propaganda, I guess, and...
Oh, well, plenty of people will profit from it. It's just, you know, we never will know the true extent of it.
Yeah. So there you go. We've got more news to get to on your Thursday night. We're going to look at the banks and the continued collapse there. Further stress throughout Europe as now we're seeing credit unions we're seeing layoffs at credit unions. I'm hearing from sources overnight about that. Millions of dollars in the hole where layoffs are like, no, we're going to fire people rather than try to dig us out of debt here at these credit unions. It's contagion, of course, with Credit Suisse and into Europe and other European banks. So we have a special guest. We're going to talk about the latest on that and what that portends for the U.S. dollar coming up. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Aura, because right now, if you want to protect yourself online, we just talked to all about like hackers and getting your personal information. I mean, anyone can find anything on the internet, including your full legal name, your personal email, your home address, everything, all of it's there, right? We talked about this, we did a search for like a friend of the family. We're able to find all sorts of stuff. Like, it's unbelievable. And everything is out there. It's kind of scary. This information is accessible because of data brokers who profit by selling your information. And a lot of people just don't protect themselves because they don't know how to. And so robocallers, telemarketers, spammers, everyone else, right, gets your information, they sell it, and that's how they're able to profit. So that's why I'm excited to tell you about our friends over at our today's sponsor at Aura. Now, Aura will identify data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests on your behalf. They'll even opt you out of junk mail and telemarketing lists. And you can use our link right now to try it free for 2 weeks. And you can see in that 2 weeks how many people are using your data, How many data brokers are sharing your information? If you go to aura.com/redacted, you can try it free for 2 weeks. See that QR code on the screen right there? You can also use our QR code that you can scan and go right there as well. So use that QR code. Again, we even had our Facebook account hacked. And we lost it to like some Vietnamese hackers. And it took us like a month and a half to try to get the darn thing back. The beauty about Aura is that they'll send you alerts. They'll send you alerts to make you aware of what's going on. And if you have like your email get hacked or anything like that, Aura will send you an alert and help you get it fixed right away because they're monitoring all of this stuff. They also have a VPN. Aura has a VPN, a password manager, real-time credit and identity theft monitoring, internet parental controls, and it protects your devices from malware. So I want you to give it free, give it a shot right now for free for 2 weeks with our link. Right now, you'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 free weeks. Go to aura.com/redacted to start your free trial. Also, we'll have a link in the description, or you can scan that QR code right now. Well, now to the banking sector, and we continue to see the fallout spreading not just through the United States banking sector, but also throughout Europe and Saudi Arabia. What's happening with Credit Suisse? What's happening to the US dollar? What's happening to the euro? What's happening to gold? What's happening to silver? A man who's not gotten much sleep recently, having to deal with all of the fallout around the US banking sector, is our friend Kevin DeMeritt. He is the CEO of Lear Capital. And I wanted to get Kevin on to talk about the effects of the broader economy and what can people do to protect themselves. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, great to be back, Clayton. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I wish you were here under better circumstances, but this is something we've been warning people, you know, over the past couple of months about what's going to happen with the US dollar. We're starting to see that. Obviously, you guys have been dealing with as much of this as you possibly can right now. How much worse do you think it's going to get before it gets better?
Well, each one of these recessions or situations start off slowly and then kind of speed up a little bit here. And we saw that in 2008, right? They weren't going to bail anybody out. Then they bailed out AIG, and the ball kept rolling. The issue that I see this time, Clayton, is that the Fed is absolutely trapped right now. If this was a bank failure back in 2008, they would be talking about, and we would be hearing about, we're going to increase the money supply, you know, QE, and we're going to lower interest rates. They're absolutely trapped. You can't do that. They lower interest rates, they start pumping up more money, inflation's going to go through the roof. So I think there's a real issue here that's going to last a lot longer than most people believe.
Yeah, they really are in a pinch right now, because we were going to see interest rates rising again, right? That was what was going to come this year, more interest rate increments over the course of this year. And then, of course, the stock, it was so strange to me. Well, maybe not strange, because it's all rigged. It's all fake anyway, and all of this fake U.S. money. So the stock market goes up, increases 300 points on Tuesday, and then goes down 500 points in the morning on Wednesday because of what's happening in Europe. But it went up on the news that the Fed is not going to likely raise interest rates because it can't now. Its hands are tied. Can't raise interest rates because now it's bailing out these banks, but the Biden administration won't call it a bailout. So what are they going to do? They're really in a pickle right now.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. If I had to guess, I think they hold off doing anything as long as possible, right? Because they need to figure out what's going on here. So you probably can't raise interest rates a half a point, which they were talking about last week. Maybe it's a quarter of a point, and that smooths out the market just a tiny little bit. Investors, I don't know what they're going to do with the $200-300 billion worth of stock value that got lost with SVB Bank, right? Nobody's talking about those people, but those people are just out the money, and the U.S. taxpayer is going to have to bail out those two banks, probably, you know, a few others coming up, you know, First Republican, Credit Suisse you bring up. I mean, there's a lot of problems ahead. I think, you know, it's a horror movie, and we're not anywhere near the credits right now. So we got a long way to go to try to figure out what's going to happen here.
In your horror movie, it's already awful for a lot of people, but then you have the Biden administration stepping in saying, we're just going to, you know, this $250,000 FDIC cap, forget that. Now it's infinite, because it doesn't really matter what the FDIC $250,000 is. Now we're just going to step in and we're going to bail you out. We're going to make sure all of your deposits are fine. So in this horror movie, it already looks bad enough, the contagion. Where do you see it going and how much worse could it get, I guess, if in this horror movie, does it, you know, like, I'm just trying to picture the sort of end final scene here with the guy with the chainsaw. Like, what does this actually look like?
Yeah, I think there's two scenarios. Neither one of them very good. If you start printing money and you lower interest rates to try to save the banks, the businesses, the consumers that are behind on their credit cards, behind on their car payments, inflation is going to go through the roof and purchasing power is going to be decimated. So you've got that situation playing out on one side, which is what they did in 2008. And on the other side, you do nothing and you let these banks and institutions fail. And if that happens, then depositors are going to have a huge problem. And when I talk about depositors, it's just not the consumer. There were a lot of businesses within both of these banks, Signature Bank and SVB, that would have went upside down if they had to wait around to try to figure out through bankruptcy court, you know, what they were going to get. So neither one of the scenarios that the Fed can play with right now sound very good. They are not in a situation where you can take the federal deficit, like in 2008, from $8 trillion to $32 trillion again. You can't go from $32 trillion to $60 trillion
right.
And not have an explosion in inflation and purchasing power loss.
Well, let's talk about the U.S. dollar. I mean, Natalie and I have talked about on our show very publicly. We've been warning people for months about, you know, we put our money, a lot of our money, into gold and silver because we're big advocates of that. Because as I've said on the show for years, that it has sustained itself for thousands of years. I also buy real estate. So this is where performing assets, things that are a hedge against the U.S. dollar, collapse. When you look at the U.S. dollar right now, again, we have printed more money in the U.S. economy in the past 3 years than in the entire history of the United States. More money has been created by the Federal Reserve. At some point, it hits a wall. Where do you see the U.S. dollar going over the next 3 months, 6 months, a year out? Where do you see the U.S. dollar going as a purchasing power?
Well, really the same place it's gone since the early 1920s, straight down. It doesn't have anywhere to go. If you think about money, whatever the dollar figures are that are out there. So if we have $8 trillion worth of debt and you know, $30 trillion worth of money supply, and you add another $30 trillion worth of money supply, the value of the dollars that are already out there become worth less and less and less. And that's what's happening right now, right? The definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. The Fed printed up money, not only here in the United States, but all around the world, and all of the purchasing power is collapsing, not just here, everywhere. So I don't think that the dollar can hold up if you're going to print more and more of it. If you're going to bail out banks and other institutions, you're just printing up more money to get that to happen. The dollar doesn't have anywhere to go but down.
Incredibly troubling. And then, of course, we're seeing what's happening right now with the housing market as well. And perhaps maybe there's a silver lining there. But boy, I really feel bad for people when I look at these energy costs. The Wall Street Journal out with a story yesterday morning about energy prices and the gas crisis. So, you know, you're making less money. Wages are going down. Your dollar is worth less, but everything else is going through the roof. Everything else costs more. And this is incredibly disastrous. I mean, we're looking at like a cyclone here.
If you're an investor, grab history book and go back and look at the 1970s, because that's where we are today, right? You have to go back 50 years to look at what happened in the economy with the stock market, with precious metals and other investments in the 70s. The inflation started moving up. They started raising interest rates. You had stagflation. Then you had enormous inflation. And by 1977, interest rates were about what they are today. Inflation was about what the readings that we have today, right around 6.5-7%. And everybody, if you look in the news, said, we're getting ahead of it. This is going to slow down. And it did not. Inflation skyrocketed up to 15%, interest rates are 14%, interest rates were 15 and 16%, and they finally killed the inflation. It took them, you know, 8.5-9 years to do it. What happened to the stock market from 68 to 81? It was up a point. Gold went from $50 an ounce to 850, silver was up 1200%. You know, you have to look at history because it rhymes. It's not going to be exact, But the Fed was trapped back then with inflation, and we're trapped with inflation again here today. When you can't pull the levers to get the economy working again through lower interest rates and pumping up the money supply, when you lose those two to inflation, you got to go back to the 70s and look what the best investments were back then, because they're going to be the best investments today. You brought up real estate. I think real estate's going to be a good investment. It's a great inflation hedge. Precious metals will be a decent inflation hedge. And there's other strategies that investors can use that I think will help save them over the next 36, 48 months, because I think it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Well, I mean, and talk me off a cliff here. If I'm wrong, let me know. But I mean, I look at precious metals. I mean, this is your world, right? At Lear Capital, I mean, gold and silver, of course. But I'm sure you guys are, that's why you're not getting a lot of sleep. People are ringing you up off the hook to, you know, to move money out of the banking system into precious metals right now. But to me, I look at gold and I look at silver as a wealth preservation mechanism right now. Like, great. Right. It's great that it's gone up 2%. Great. Great. I don't care about that. In the same way that I don't care about that in real estate. Great that there's appreciation. That's nice icing on the cake. Make great. But I want my money in something that the U.S. government can't F with. They can't literally suck it dry because it loses value and it, like the U.S. dollar. So for me, gold and silver and holding those precious metals and real estate and all that is that I'm taking a $1 and I'm converting it to something that has survived for 5,000 years through wars, government collapse, fiat currency collapse. Am I wrong about that, or am I seeing it wrong?
No, I just think on the appreciation, when you say, you know, it's nice that gold is up to 1 or 2%. Remember, you transferred this dollar that's falling to the precious metal. And when you sell it back, right, and get some cash to go buy some groceries, we need it to be worth more, because inflation has eroded this. So the gold should go up, the value of the dollar comes down. When you transfer it back, your purchasing power should be exactly the same. You shouldn't have lost the purchasing power. So you saved, you know, that purchasing power, you saved the value of your real wealth.
That's, yeah, great point. Yeah, absolutely. Spot on. Well, that's why we have you on, because you're an expert in this world. So we'll keep our eye on this. Kevin, thank you for keeping your eye on what's going on with this as well. And we'll let you get back to it. Kevin DeMera, thank you so much for joining us from Lear Capital. We appreciate
it. You bet. Nice to be with you.
So our thanks to Kevin there as we continue to watch what's going on with these banks and the Credit Suisse fallout, you know, bank shares soaring after like they're maybe throwing a credit line there to these. It's kind of crazy what's going on right now. So just protect yourself, guys.
Absolutely. So we have more news to get to. We're going to tell you about operations within the CIA to control the news. I'm sure that shocks you that the news is not bipartisan or neutral in any shape or form. We are. Thank you for still being here with us. So if you'd like to support us and show your friends that you like Redacted, we would really appreciate it. We want to tell you about our store. You can go over to redacted.inc/store or redactedstore.com. That works too. Both of them work. And you can get all manner of fun merchandising to support our store, such as the limited time anti-war shirt that will only be available for another few days. It's Silence is Complicity plus our Redacted logo. We also have hats. We have sweatshirts. We have t-shirts and mugs. And, you know, we really appreciate you signaling to the world that you stand for anti-war, anti-media propaganda, and free speech, because that's why you're here. We assume that we at least have that in common, and we appreciate you doing that and also tagging us, showing us that you're supporting us with the show. We really, really appreciate it. So again, if you'd like to check it out, and we hope you do, it's redactedstore.com.
Well, do you guys know about Operation Mockingbird? Yeah, it's where the CIA clandestinely worked in news organizations, infiltrated them, and tried to influence what Americans understood about the Cold War and God knows what else. And we never knew it. We never knew that these CIA operatives were working inside the New York Times and CBS News and other major media outlets. Well, now we know that Operation Mockingbird actually is still alive and well. You thought it went away? No, it didn't. Dan Cohen, Redacted correspondent, is here to look at how Operation Mockingbird has really shifted over the years culturally and is operating sort of under a new flag. Dan, welcome to the show. What did you find?
Exactly. Well, it's just Operation Mockingbird under a different sort of name. So what I'm going to show is how the Associated Press, one of the biggest outlets in media, and PBS are in bed with the U.S. government, that they're not journalistic media outlets, but they're propaganda organs that essentially conceal their links to the U.S. government. So these two outlets, AP and PBS, they run what they call the War Crimes Watch Ukraine, in which they claim to document war crimes in Ukraine, but you'll notice they only look at what they allege to be war crimes carried out by Russia, the geopolitical foe of the United States. They don't even bother to investigate Ukrainian war crimes. So right off the bat, we can see that they're only interested in war crimes so long as they can be used to advance a geopolitical agenda, which is maintaining public support for the United States' primary role in the war in Ukraine. So they track war crimes in order to keep the war going. It's kind of an irony. If their preferred side commits war crimes, which it certainly has, Ukraine, then they don't even bother. They just completely avoid it.
And there's been plenty of war crimes that we've covered here on this show. I mean, just examples off the top of my head. I mean, I remember Patrick Lancaster, friend of the show, was there moments after in a residential area of Ukraine, struck by shells, shelling of residential zones all through Donetsk in the Donbas. And for no other reason, these were not military targets. They were residential areas, war crimes.
There have been so many. I mean, Patrick Lancaster has documented numerous Ukrainian war crimes carried out on the people of the Donbas. I remember that one vividly when Ukraine launched a Tochka-U ballistic missile and rained down cluster bombs over the center of downtown Donetsk and killed 22 people and maimed many more. And it was all on film. There, you know, Patrick was there. So crimes like these, and he's continued to document many more, as have others, these go totally ignored by the AP and PBS and basically their partners, which I'm going to lay out right here. So if we look at the methodology tab of this war crimes tracker website, we see that the AP and PBS are in league with a series of groups that are fronts for the U.S. government and its intelligence apparatus. I'm talking specifically about, I'm going to list them off, the Center for Information Resilience, Bellingcat, the Reckoning Project, the International Partnership for Human Rights, and the Ukrainian Healthcare Center. I'm going to focus on a few of these. The Center for Information Resilience, it's a UK firm. It's advised by former Estonian Foreign Minister Tomas Hendrik Ilves, who oversaw Estonia's ascension to NATO. And it's also advised by ex-CIA agent Cindy Otis. Maybe even more notorious, its vice president is the one and only Nina Yankelevich, the head of Biden administration's short-lived Department of Homeland Security Disinformation Governance Board. And according to this magazine, Intelligence Online, the Center for Information Resilience actually hired Nina Yankelevich in order to get funding from U.S. patrons. So very clear links to U.S. intelligence there. Its website freely, openly admits, it says, we have received grants from the UK government's Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, the US State Department, USAID, and Australia's Department for Foreign Affairs and Trade. So nothing about that funding in AP or PBS's reporting on Ukraine. Okay, so you only find that by doing some research. But if you watch any of the reports that they put out, they don't mention that at all. There's also Bellingcat, which everyone I think knows about by this point, the notorious disinformation outlet that takes money from the National Endowment for Democracy and is a favorite of U.S. intelligence. And here, Bellingcat's founder, Elliot Higgins, promotes the AP and PBS's work on Buka. But of course, he doesn't say that they're relying on his organization for information. So kind of shady, you know, tactic there to sort of conceal the links. And then we have PBS returning the favor, treating Higgins as some independent expert. So you can see this trickery. They, you know, don't really reveal anything. It's only kind of behind the scenes. Then we have AP and PBS's next partner, the Reckoning Project, which claims to train journalists to document Russian crimes in Ukraine. Well, this, like the others, is funded by USAID, the National Endowment for Democracy, something called the Institute of War and Peace Reporting, which is also funded by USAID, the US State Department, and European governments. Okay, so then we have one more organization called the International Partnership for Human Rights, which is based in Brussels and is funded by the European Union, the Open Society Foundation, which is, of course, controlled and funded by billionaire George Soros. We have SIDA, which is the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, kind of like Sweden's USAID, and the National Endowment for Democracy. So again, none of these government funders or ties are disclosed in AP or PBS's reporting. We're just supposed to believe they're acting on their own, doing this independent reporting.
Shouldn't there be some law, I mean, where we get this disclosure, or maybe in the FTC where we actually see these, you know, these reports are funded by the CIA in the same way that when we see these news reports about pharmaceuticals, when you dig deep into it, you realize that the funding for a lot of these news organizations comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or Pfizer or Moderna. And we don't see that. That shows up on CNN's website as actual journalism, and it's actually not.
Exactly. It's amazing that there's no disclosure anywhere on television. I mean, PBS is supposed to be public national, you know, public television, right? Even though it's funded by a whole bunch of corporations. But none of this ever really gets talked about outside of independent media, where we hold their feet to the fire a little bit. And you see that there's no political will in Washington. I mean, there should, you know, there was a law that prevented the U.S. government from exposing, from subjecting its own citizens to government propaganda, but that was actually repealed, I believe, by the Obama administration. So all of this is basically, is I suppose, legal now, but you would think if there was some kind of political will in Washington, some members of Congress, then, you know, they might push back against these kinds of groups, against Bellingcat, which is, I think, you know, the most prominent one that has played such a huge role in so many psyops that have pushed us to the brink of war, that have paved the way for this Ukraine war. You know, from the Skripal incident where Bellingcat played a central role. And I mean, there's so many others in Syria, in Ukraine also. So there's just no political will, and it's has very deleterious effects.
Well, also, too, from the broadcast side of things, right? Wouldn't it be great if you have on PBS NewsHour or these other quote-unquote, you know, the Associated Press or whatever it happens to be, even, you know, even the mainstream media organizations like CBS or NBC or CNN or MSNBC or Fox, it doesn't really matter. When they have on a member of the military, former CIA, former member of the military, who's still on the take, who's still making money from these the intelligence community, they don't disclose it at all. They just, here's a former member of the CIA, and here's on our air now. He's giving us answers about the Ukraine war right on our television now. It's not even hidden anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the major sort of difference in years of Operation Mockingbird through kind of the early years, the late 40s and 50s and 60s of the Cold War, where Operation Mockingbird was covert. You know, you had journalists, the CIA contacting journalists and basically getting journalists to create either false stories or run their stories by them. And that was all secretive. But now it's just kind of out in the open where, you know, you go from, I mean, John Brennan is the perfect example, ex-CIA director who is in the media on a near daily basis, you know, talking about why Putin would have, you know, why Putin bombed the Nord Stream pipeline himself and, you know, giving out all kinds of disinformation with total, you know, if you wanted to have, I think at least, if you wanted to have intelligence or ex-intelligence on television, that's one thing, which is, you know, questionable, but at least push back on them. you know, ask them some difficult questions, hold them to their claims and their lies, ask them, you know, demand they show evidence, proof, as a journalist or reporter should do. But it's always they just defer to them like they're these, you know, oracles of unquestionable knowledge. And so it just says everything about the media. And so now, you know, it went from covert to now out in the open, celebrated. And it's sort of like a total cultural shift in Washington, where it's all just controlled by the CIA openly. And instead of like the cloak and dagger style secretive way, it's like they call it, you know, democracy and free media. And, you know, the Washington Post says, well, without this, you know, democracy will die. It'll be in the darkness.
Yeah, that's their tagline. Democracy dies in the dark, which is crazy. And yeah, John Brennan is a perfect example. Here's a guy that literally is a CNN contributor. That's how they can introduce him, right? CNN contributor, former head of the CIA, John Brennan joins us now, et cetera, et cetera. But what about his other connections? What about his other money that he's making from outside of CNN? Do we get to know about that? Do we also get to know what sort of connections he still has with the CIA, where they're feeding him information that he gets to just go on CNN and broadcast? None of that. No pushback, because now you're a CNN contributor and we're excited to have you on board, John. We're excited that you're now an employee of CNN. So I'm not going to ask you any tough questions. You're hanging out in the building. You're in the cafeteria with the rest of us. And that's how this works now. It's unbelievable, but this is how Operation Mockingbird has evolved. It's now it's right in front of our faces.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many other examples, even more recent one, Jen Psaki, who, you know, went from White House press secretary, had a nice little break out of the public eye. And now she has her own show on MSNBC, you know, after so much disinformation for the, you know, for like the Biden administration. And then she just transitions perfectly. And it's just, this is like normal accepted standard practice in the media. And so it just shows, well, you know, she was part of what was Tony Blinken's outfit, West Exec Advisors. She was part of West Exec Advisors. So, you know, which was basically part of the military industrial complex. Then she goes into the White House as press secretary, and then she goes into MSNBC. So this is like the military industrial media government complex. This is just one big animal that has just taken control of all media, which all mainstream media, which, you know, is why people more and more are turning to channels like, you know, Redacted or Russell, you know, looking to Russell Brand or Jimmy Dore or alternative outlets where, you know, people are actually going to speak truthfully.
Yeah, that's right. It's so sad. So sad. Well, people are turning off CNN, and that's why CNN's ratings are in the toilet. And now there's word that the head of CNN, the new head of CNN, who just came in like a few months ago, was already on the chopping block, word spreading through CNN headquarters that he's about to be fired. So, well, people don't want to watch propaganda. Dan Cohen, great to see you. Thank you so much for this report.
Thanks, Clayton.
All right. So it's amazing. I mean, to think that the CIA actively working in our newsrooms, but they're now on the payroll and the deep state. They're just on the payroll. So that's how it
works. I mean, it's not surprising after we saw how many government employees were on Twitter's payroll. We know that still happens inside of Facebook. And so, of course, we know that this is a natural extension of the media.
It's really, really sad. And sad that, you know, we have to, and not sad because you have to turn to independent news media like us. So thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our show. We really appreciate it. But it's sad that you can't trust the mainstream media at all. You turn on CNN or MSNBC or any of them. I mean, you're literally like watching state-run media, basically.
Yeah.
PBS, well, people, for crying out.
And when you argue with people about it, they're like, no, you're a conspiracy theorist. They're labeled as experts. People see them as experts.
Yeah.
Like, no, this general is saying this is exactly what's going on. They're an expert.
Yeah. Oh, I saw John Brennan on TV. He's a former CIA head. He must be an expert. No, he's not. He's a tool of the deep state.
You know, it's become just when I read mainstream news, it's almost like the Matrix. I see code where I'm like, what are you trying to make me see? And what's the code behind here that you're hiding? And I have just like trained myself to look for the gaps that I can find the real story and like gap here, gap here, gap here. That's where I'm going to look. And that's where I normally find something that they've omitted on purpose.
Well, we're teaching our 12-year-old son. Eventually, we'll teach our 10-year-old daughter this. But he right now is writing essays in school where he has to do research. He's doing a story right now in the United Nations in Argentina, and he's doing a story about it. He was assigned that country to write about, right? And so he started writing this essay, and he had some information. You kind of called him out on it. You're like, where'd you find this? And he's like, oh, I Googled that, and I got this. And we had to have a discussion with him to let him know, and we showed him the clip of the member of the United Nations admitting at the World Economic Forum that the United Nations influences,
works
with Google and suppresses search results so that the United Nations' own search results bubble up to the top of Google. And he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. And so he's a 12-year-old who's just had his mind blown, who thought he could just go to Google and get honest search results. And we're having to explain to him, no. That's what they want you to see.
Well, I mean, he literally found information showing him that Argentina wants to grow a lot of soy, not beef, which is what they're famous for, and is interested in, you know, renewable energy. And I was like, Argentina's the first country in South America to invest in nuclear and wants to do that more. And wants to be less Western aligned in order to get accessible energy to their people. I'm like, did you find that at all? He goes, no, where would I find it? Would I get in trouble for, you know, presenting these things if other people can't find it on Google? And I was like, son, you can't only be as smart as Google will let you. You have to go further than that. But these are the things that Google has presented for him to represent Argentina in a mock United Nations. And I was like, no, you have to dig deeper than this.
You have to try harder. And, you know, that's what we're up against. You know? Yeah. We're up against this deep state and the way that they control us in the World Economic Forum. I even saw the World Economic Forum today announce their new young future enrollees. So the new future young, it's almost like the Hitler Youth, basically, like the young, I don't know what you would call them. Hey, we've got our young new World Economic Forum members, and they're like teenagers, and they've just been enrolled, so we can influence the future generations of the World Economic Forum.
I mean, you're speaking exactly to this inoculation thing we talked about. Like, they're being inoculated with ignorance in topics to move forward and perpetuate it, you know,
Indoctrinated.
Yeah.
Well, we are crowdsourcing our son's Argentine project. So if you have things that you think he should see that are hidden from us on Google, you can tag me. I will. I even sent him my whole piece that we did last year on nuclear and why that's the best option we've got right now for massive affordable energy. And he's like, well, I have to watch this because it's me. He's like, you just told me. You delivered it to me. Do I have to watch your YouTube piece? I was like, yes, you do.
Yeah, and then I even checked in on him
this
while he was on the school bus. I'm like, Miles, are you watching our nuclear piece from last night? He's like, I'm watching it. And he sent me a screenshot that he was halfway through the video. I'm like, good.
The poor kid. You all are choosing to watch this, but we force it upon him.
Well, we're starting him out on the right foot so he doesn't, you know, end up, anyway.
Yeah.
Tell him to use Yandex.com.
Yandex.com.
Yandex.com is a search engine that I found that's pretty open.
And Brave, right? Brave browser as well. Brave just had a big update, right?
Brave is a secure browser. And I did a whole video on this because people think that it is, but you're still getting sourced from Google. So no, it's just more secure. So Brave is another one that sources Google. I had to look. I found two browsers that don't source Google. And Yandex is one of them. And ironically, is Russian. And then there's another one that I can't remember the name of. It just didn't function well enough. I got good results, but it didn't function well enough. But most of the others are all still Google results.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep updating you on that technology here so that you can get honest answers that are not run by the United Nations. Well, you know what does censor you is YouTube. YouTube loves to censor content. And so for this next segment, we're going to talk about vaccines and young people. As it relates to the CDC, or the FDA, and their authorization of that. So it's a whole discussion about Pfizer and the FDA. We cannot do that on YouTube. So we are going to move now to Rumble and say goodbye to our YouTube audience. If you'd like to come over to our Rumble channel, the stream will continue. And they are censorship free. They do not believe in censorship. And they will allow us to have this discussion freely. So come on over to Rumble. Rumble.com/redacted is the place to go. Come on over. It's warm over here. Rumble.